development and maintenance of an organism is orchestrated by a set of chemical reactions that switch parts of the genome off and on at strategic times and locations. Today we're going to learn how we can manage to turn the switches on or off. Interesting, don't you think? Stay with us to learn more about this fascinating topic. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Narada and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on Facebook and Twitter, Go Healthy Live, and our website, it's hopetv.org/gohealthy. Joining me today, all the way from Germany, is Dr. Heidi Schultz-Meyer, a geneticist who has worked on the genome project. And in the studio with me, Dr. John Kelly, a lifestyle specialist and an adjunct faculty member of the Loma Linda University School of Medicine in California. Welcome, doctors. It's great to have you back. Dr. Kelly, how many generations can our cells divide for? And then what happens after that? Is there a limit?
You know, it is interesting to think about that each cell in our body came from the division of a previous cell. So we started with one cell, and then that became two, and that became four, and so forth. And interestingly enough, it does seem that science has found that about 50 to 70 divisions seems to be a built-in limit is associated with the maximum number of divisions a cell can perform.
So what controls that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, it is cancer is a situation where that control is lost because cancer cells just grow endlessly. And what seems to control this is that every time the chromosomes are replicated, that replication process loses a little bit of the end of the DNA. And that's where the telomeres are. I'm sure we're going to be talking about telomeres quite a bit today.
Telomeres. Dr. Heidi, what's a telomere? And how do they change as we age to control those division processes?
Okay, so before I start talking about telomeres, let's review a little bit. Okay. We talked last time that our genome is organized like a book. So all the information that makes us what we are, it's written in a book that is organized in chapters, and the chapters are the chromosomes. And our chromosomes are made up of DNA, which is actually a double strand. So we have two strands of DNA making up our chromosome. And it's like when you take two threads and try to wind them together. Mm-hmm. And you can do that, you know, getting your two threads and turning around. But when you end, have to keep them together and you don't want them to split up. So that's what are there for. You want to keep that material together on the one side. And on the other side, each time you material, because of how it's done, you lose a little bit. So if we didn't have the telomeres, which are these sequences at the ends of the chromosomes, then each time the cell divides, we would lose maybe parts of an important gene, and we don't want that. So that's why we have the telomeres. It's a repeat of a six-letter motif, T-T-A-G-G, and that motif is written up many times, hundreds of times, so that you have about 10,000 letters which don't encode, you can't read them as a word, and they make up the telomere.
So,
and it's interesting to note that everyone born with a different length of telomeres in our chromosomes. So not every baby is born with the same quantity of letters at the end of the chromosome.
Wow. Now, I think the So what you're saying, I think we've got a graphic of a shoelace there, but so what you're saying is the telomeres are like the end of the shoelace. They keep the DNA from unstranding, so to speak. And if we have the frayed shoelace, it doesn't have such a long life. But then as we age, what happens to those telomeres? They're obviously determining how many cell divisions are in a lifetime of a cell. So what happens when we age? I think we have a graphic there for you too.
Like I was mentioning, each time our cell machinery copies our chromosome, because of the way it works, you lose 50 to 100 base pairs at the end. And that's the good thing, we lose telomere sequence. And as a cell divides once, twice, three times, then you're losing more and more. And there comes a time where the telomere gets really short. And that's the moment when the cell decides, okay, I can't divide anymore because it's too risky. I could start losing important material from the genes, and I don't want that. So that's where a cell can't divide anymore.
I think we have a graphic there of what happens to telomeres as we age, the length of telomeres. Can we have that? So you can see there at birth, and Dr. Heidi's just telling us we don't all have the same length, but then by 35 and 65, our telomeres are much shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. John, can telomeres shorten prematurely? Do we all have that same curve on the graph? Or can we do things in our lifestyle that would speed that process up?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because, you know, we know science has shown that lifestyle choices are a major determinant of longevity for us as human beings or animals. So it only makes sense that we would see some effect on the telomeres. As far as I'm aware, however, there are a number of other factors that the telomere length alone has not been found to explain all of the variation in our longevity or even disease, things such as oxidative stress and glycation or other factors. But I am sure research has shown that a healthy lifestyle does promote telomere length in one way, at least, by increasing the activity of the enzyme that keeps that length rebuilt each in the cell.
So we can actually slow it by what we do.
That's right. We can certainly slow down the shortening
kind
process.
The decay or the shortening process. What sort of things might do that?
Well, one of the studies that I'm acquainted with that specifically looked at telomerase, which is the enzyme.
Oh, sorry, I meant what sort of things can sort of speed, or is there nothing that speeds it up particularly?
You're talking about as far as
Shortening.
Oh, okay. Well, we know, for example, that carrying excess weight is harmful. We know that lack of activity, physical activity, if we do not get physical activity, these telomere shorten faster. We know that oxidative stress, for example, that could be from our diet or from lack of sleep, can contribute. So many of these things that we know are unhealthy, we have been, you know, associated with shortening of the telomeres. But that, as I wanted to say, that connection is not 100%. It seems that there's other factors as well. Genetic susceptibility and so forth is part of it.
Dr. Heidi, Dr. Kelly was mentioning cancer cells. Do they have different telomere function? Because they go more than 50 generations. So what's with the cancer cell?
Well, the cancer cell has the same telomere sequence that a normal cell. The only difference is that in normal cells in our body, this enzyme, which Dr. Kelly just mentioned, telomerase, this enzyme has the function to add more of these repeats if the telomere gets too short. But the bad thing is in adults, this telomerase is usually inactive in our cells, except in some skin cells and hair, follicular hair cells. And the cancer cells manage to activate this telomerase so that they have the possibility to divide more or keep on dividing, and so the tumor can grow. So the difference between a normal cancerous cell in relation to telomere is that the cancerous cell has activated the telomerase and therefore can divide.
Well, we're learning lots of great information today. Coming up next, I'll meet you in the kitchen. Don't move, we'll be right back.
Revival is the renewal of the spiritual energies of the soul. It has to do with a new commitment to Jesus every day. It leads us to a deeper experience in prayer. It leads us to the diligent study of God's Word and a life of service and Christian witness.
Togo, Nigeria, Iran, Canada, the United States, emails from around the world from Hope Sabbath School members. It's truly amazing to see how God is bringing a worldwide family, His people, studying His Word together. We hope you'll be part of Hope Sabbath School as we study deeply into the Word of God. Join us for Hope Sabbath School.
Welcome back. Well, we're in the kitchen. Yali.
You know, vegetarians kind of miss out on Thanksgiving, don't they?
Do they?
Well, they don't get the turkey.
Hmm.
What say we build a turkey today?
How about that? Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Can
okay.
We?
Yes, we can.
All right.
Over here,
We've
got some. Oh, you need to read the ingredients first.
Let's do that.
Let's do that, yeah. We have.
Here we have. We're going to start with the celery dressing, which is 2 loaves of French bread, 2 cups of chopped onions, 2 cups of chopped celery, 1 cup of soy milk powder, 1/2 cup of nutritional yeast flakes, 1/4 cup of Mackay's chicken style seasoning, 1 teaspoon of salt, 6 cups of water, 2 tablespoons of sage, and 1 teaspoon of thyme.
Okay.
Sounds easy.
Yeah, that part is. So we're going to make the dressing first, all right? So over here, we've actually jumped the gun a little bit, and we're simmering some onions and celery. Shall I take that for you, and then you can give it a stir? Oh, that smells good, doesn't it?
It does, it really does.
Smell of celery.
The colors in it too match your show, look. Green and purple.
Oh, green and purple, yeah. Now, there's a really good, go healthy recipe. Shall I pour some of that water in? So we've just had a little bit in. And do you want to add the other ingredients? There you go, there's some milk powder to pour in.
Let's do it.
That's some soy milk powder. You might want to stir that up and get it mixing through before we add the other things, I think. Although it does mix quite nicely, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. A little more water.
Yep. And some nutritional yeast flakes, which gives it that lovely savory taste, which goes really nicely with the celery. Some herbs. Here comes some thyme. Always need more thyme, don't we? And some sage. And again, those are my two favorites when I'm doing vegetarian cooking, is sage and thyme. Let me add a bit more water there. All right, now, over here in this bowl, what we've done is torn up some French bread. And it's really nice, we've got some multigrain French bread, so it's probably half white, but it's half whole grain.
All right.
So we're going to pour all of this mixture over, pour the water in, rest of the water. And then if you wouldn't mind pouring that straight over here. Shall I take this for you?
Sure, thank you.
You really are showing great promise as a young chef here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, really. All right. We'll stir that through nicely. So that's our dressing. That's all there is to it. So we're going to want to...
Seems easy enough.
Yeah. Let's spray this... do you want to spray that roasting tray? Because we are going to need to put our turkey on the... Now, for this, you might want to hold it a little bit further back so it spreads further. That's it. Perfect.
All right.
Good, good. And now we'll tip it into the middle of our tray.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we're going to get our hands dirty here, so I'm going to up my sleeves. You ready to tip? Just tip it. All right. Get some of those nice goodies out of the bottom there. And, oh, those herbs are lovely. Now, do you want to try and form that into the shape of a turkey bird? And you know, that's for our viewers, this is actually only half a recipe. So this turkey, I've used this recipe to feed 25, 30 people at once. Really compress it in, so it's really nicely firm. That's it. I'll hold it at this end for you. Perfect. Hey, it looks like you've done this before. Great. I'm going to leave you with dirty hands for just a moment because this over here is our finished product. We put that into the oven at 350 degrees and bake it for 45 to 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. 60 minutes seconds. It would be nice, wouldn't it? And it comes out with this lovely brown, crusty topping. It's yummy just on its own, but you do want to add the turkey meat to it. So nice. What we're going to do with turkey meat is we're going to create it out of tofu.
Okay.
All right. So if you want to, while you've got your hands dirty, you're going to crumble that up nice and fine. So just work away there.
Should I have washed my hands for this?
Well, nice joke. Mm. Yes, don't try this at home. It's very dangerous. Unless you've washed your hands. All right, now we're going to add some turmeric. Now for this, we're going to want 1 teaspoon of turmeric, 1 cup of nutritional yeast flakes, 1/2 cup of chicken style seasoning, and 1.5 cups of finely chopped onions. Now I'm using red onions, but yellow probably looks better. I just like the flavor of red onions. So mix that all up for us nicely. And that's sort of all the wet things. And once you've got that mixed up nicely through, that's it, get right to the bottom of the bowl, turn it right over. Does this remind you of being a child and playing in the mud?
Yes, it's
yeah,
actually,
it's very therapeutic.
Good right now.
Yeah, it does feel good. I love doing this. Okay, now that's the task. Mix that right through. Now it's going to firm up more like turkey meat.
There we go.
And I'll roll that bowl around for you so you can get that mixed through really well. And you'll notice that now it's actually of a consistency that we're going to be able to form.
Mm-hmm.
Legs and wings and make this just like a turkey bird. So, ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. So a handful over here and we're going to form this all over our stuffing. Great, thanks. Keep bringing the little truck over and dumping it off for me. All right. So you're going to want to create quite a nice layer over the top. Bring a bit more.
Should we give it some turkey legs?
We want to cover it all. Thank you. Now, we are going to want to make some drumsticks. So keep that over there for the drumsticks.
Okay.
And you make one, I'll make one. Race you.
Oh,
There you go. Brilliant. Drumsticks on each side. We got enough for a wing. We're going to have one winged bird. No, let's do a two-winged bird.
Let's try it.
Great. Oh, yeah. It's even got feathers on the end, your one.
There you go.
And we're going to pop that in the oven for half an hour at 350 degrees. And we'll see you in a minute. And Yali, look what you made.
Wow.
It looks beautiful. Just came out of the oven.
It does look beautiful and it smells wonderful.
Oh, doesn't it smell good?
It smells so good in here.
Oh, look what's coming.
Well, look who's here.
Yes.
Hey, welcome.
The smell was drifting through the hallways.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes. Thanksgiving,
guys. Thanksgiving. Would you like to
come
do the honors?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, look.
Can you see this here?
Welcome to the party.
I know what to do with that.
You know what to do with it.
I do. I know what to do with this.
Is this the turkey that never walked across the barnyard?
Let's do a little bit of Thanksgiving carving here.
Oh, come on, just give her the whole drumstick.
Oh, no, she can't have the whole drumstick there. All right, we're going to give, here we go.
It even looks like a turkey.
Yeah, it even has the...
Oh, where's the bones? Where's the bones?
The bones in this one.
I don't see the bones.
Thank you. So, Yarley, you're quite the cook there.
Oh, now we're getting to the good stuff. Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Stuffing.
Yes, exactly. The stuffing that's under there.
I got to commend you on your excellent selection of turkey here. This is very good.
A little more.
Thank you.
Here we go.
Thank
you. Boom. Look at that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is a
Yarley, let me hook you up.
Well.
But David, you can't miss getting a piece to yourself, you know.
Oh, yes.
You've got to get in here.
Come on, David.
Come on, David.
Let me get a slice for myself, too, here.
Yes. Okay. This is really very tasty.
Okay.
Wow.
You're enjoying this.
Does everybody have a piece?
So,
yeah, we all have a piece.
Wow, happy.
Watch you eat it, David.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go.
There we are.
Yes. Very good. Surprisingly good. Surprisingly good.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Everything that we dissect at a fundamental level about a cell is relevant to cancer. And the fact that you're doing that to understand a disease that affects patients, that juxtaposition is exciting.
Epigenetics describes the way in which cells take different parts of the genetic information within them and package them in such a way that certain genes are used in one tissue and other genes are used in other tissues. Without epigenetics, quite frankly, you could never develop as a human being. So we now understand that when cancer develops, this process is very much intimately involved in making a normal cell switch off genes that should be on.
The genes get mispackaged. Some of them get closed up into boxes where they cannot be used, and others get activated when they shouldn't be used.
The changes and the alterations in terms of abnormalities in cancer are universal to every type of cancer, ranging from pediatric to the most common tumors in adults. And that's what we've been learning a lot about.
What makes our project so exciting is that we have drugs that can reverse these changes, can unlock the doors, can turn genes back on again, make things right. The drug doesn't work in all patients. So we want to know, well, why does it work in some and not others? The drug that we'll be working with mostly was really developed to treat leukemia, a pre-leukemic condition. And what we want to do now is to try and extend that into the solid tumors where there's been far less work done.
What really fueled our concept is members of the team had started to take a leukemia drug regimen and apply it to patients with advanced lung cancer. And very early on, we saw a 53-year-old lady with advanced lung cancer, quite sick. And after 2 or 3 months of therapy, she began to respond, and she's 2 years out now. And we knew we had to try to take this further. And we felt like in other solid tumors, not only lung, breast, and colon cancer, it now merited an intense try with a team that really understood the nuances of this kind of therapy and how to apply it.
Now we're at the stage where we actually can take what we learned in the lab and apply it to real cancers and actually make differences. The way we measure progress is often not the same way as the public measures progress. I always ask people, you know, the airplane test. If you sit down in an aircraft flying across the country and somebody sits next to you and says, well, what do you do? And you say, well, I do cancer research. They're not interested in how many papers you've published. They're interested in what progress we're actually making to make cancer a disease of the past. And I think they have to understand that we are beginning to now make progress. But in order to keep going, we have to maintain the momentum, and people have to get behind it.
Stand Up to Cancer folks announced that so far the effort has raised $100 million and counting.
That's why this program, the Stand Up to Cancer program, is going to make a real difference, because it forces you to measure progress by what you've done for other people.
Well, that's fascinating. Dr. John, you were telling us about the Geminal study last time we were talking epigenetics. Just give us an overview and then remind us of what the study was about, what they were looking for and what they found.
Well, the Geminal study is a very interesting study. It was first published in 2008 in the Proceedings in the National Academy of Science. This was a study done by Dr. Ornish and his team in 30 men who had prostate cancer. Now, the prostate cancer was indolent, you know, low-risk type, and so they did not get surgery or chemotherapy. They got a comprehensive lifestyle intervention to treat their cancer. And after 3 months, at the beginning of the study, they had needle biopsies of the prostate, the cancer lesion. And then at the end of 3 months on this lifestyle intervention program, a low-fat diet, et cetera, they had another needle biopsy, and from each they isolated messenger RNA, which is sort of like a wiretap, if you will, on the gene expression in the cell. And from that, they were able to look and see what changes had occurred in gene expression just in those 3 months with the lifestyle change in the cancer cells. Okay. Of course, on gross exam, the prostate cancer seemed to be in receding, you know, in remission, improving. But when they looked at the results of the messenger RNA, there were over 400 genes that were turned down, that were known to be associated with cancer growth, cancer production, that were being expressed at a lower rate, and about 50 or so beneficial genes that were actually being expressed at a higher rate. So it was quite remarkable. But now, the other piece of this that's related to the telomeres is they did an analysis on the enzyme activity of telomerase that Dr. Meyer was telling us puts the telomere sequence back on.
Oh, huh.
And it was over 30%, about 33% more active than it was at baseline. So the telomerase activity was actually improved with this intervention.
Wow. So Dr. Heidi, if telomeres would normally be expected to get shorter, what are the things that have been proven to lengthen them particularly? Because I'm expecting that this study, it was perhaps a surprise to them. So can you give us some specifics of what would lengthen them?
Okay, there hasn't been a single factor identified which would lead to a activation of telomerase and lengthening of the telomeres. But of course, it has been shown many times that diet, lifestyle, and very important, emotional health, childhood experiences, and behavioral factors play a big role in the telomere and their protection. So for example, there was one study in the US with about 5,700 women, and they looked at five modifiable factors like smoking, body weight, physical activity, moderate alcohol consumption, and healthy diet. And they saw that the women who followed or tried to apply all five factors in their life had significantly longer telomeres. But they, when they tried to find if one of these five factors could link, they didn't find any link. So actually, you can't say it's this one thing. There has also been studies with pessimistic women. So they measured how pessimistic the women were, and they found an inverse correlation between pessimism and telomere length. So this psychological factors, I think, play a big role. Could be through oxidative stress, for example, cortisol, and so on. And it's interesting, even meditation has been shown to play a role in telomere length. It was studied in men who were taking part in a 3-month intensive meditation retreat, and they had a control group of similar men. And they found that the men who meditated for 3 months had managed to get higher telomerase activity at the end of the 3 months. So, you know, there's many factors, and many of them have to do with our how we live our life and how we try to be optimistic and so on.
This is fascinating stuff. So it's not just what we do, but it's also how we think.
How we think.
So
mind-body connection there, isn't there?
There is, isn't there? So do you know, are there any particular... Many people meditate, but in different ways. Do you know if it's to do with how they meditate, what they meditate on?
You know, I'm not aware of studies that have looked at that, because as we were just saying, the studies are new and are somewhat limited. Mm. But what we do know is we know that the brain has an influence on the body, as Dr. Meyer was just mentioning, meditation, but even our attitude, what we, for example, a study showing that the effects of exercise were different in those who had a positive attitude about exercise versus those who didn't want to do this. They were felt like they were being made to do this. So it's
but they still did the exercise.
They still did it, and but the effect of the exercise was not as beneficial as in those who were feeling positive about it. So, you know, and nowadays it's gaining a lot of ground as we're talking about resilience. You know, when it comes to the attitude, is it a good attitude produces resilience, which is just as Dr. Meyer was saying, that it maintains or preserves the telomeres. There's a lot of other things that apparently having a positive attitude about life can actually delay aging and increase longevity. But, you know, I think, for example, diet is important, exercise is important, but the way we think about ourselves and our relationship. You know, the scriptures have an interesting verse, says that a merry heart doeth good like a medicine.
Right.
And this science seems to be supporting that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Amazing. Dr. Heidi, we've been talking about epigenetics before. How does that play a role in pregnancy? You know, a woman who's pregnant, does the epigenetic effect of her lifestyle get passed down to her fetus, her unborn child?
Yes, that has been shown many times with different substances and different experiments. But what's interesting, I mean, you could think, okay, it's because the baby is inside of the woman, it has a connection to what's happening to the mother. But it has also been shown that men can pass on epigenetic information to their children from things they have lived years before they conceived this child. For example, a study in the United Kingdom has shown that the age at which a future father starts smoking is correlated with the body mass index of his sons, but not his daughters. So if a man starts smoking when he's 9 years of age, his sons will have a greater body mass index when they are 9 years old, but not his daughters, for example. And then another really interesting study was done in Sweden. So there was a very small town, it's called Överkalix, Alex, and it was really isolated from civilization in the 19th and 20th century. So people had to rely on what they could grow for their living and to have enough to eat. And then they followed up the generations and they found out that if the grandparent of a person living in the middle of the 20th century had during the slow growth period years, that's between 8 to 12 years, if he didn't have so much to eat, then his grandsons lived longer than the grandsons of grandfathers who had a lot to eat during this period. So again, it passed through the through the male line, so to say. And I mean, that's really interesting.
Yes, it is. That's amazing. So it's to the third generation at least. Well, thank you. So let's look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, health destiny preset before birth? How does alcohol increase cancer? And mother's stress upsets the unborn child. A substantial body of scientific evidence from various perspectives suggests that conditions during the interuterine period of life plays a critical role in what is referred to as developmental programming of the unborn child. One research group proposes that physiological stress from hormonal, immune, inflammatory, or oxidative sources during the intrauterine period of development may alter or program the telomere biology system in a way that accelerates cellular dysfunction, aging, and disease susceptibility over the lifespan. Alcohol consumption is related to increased cancer risk. However, the exact mechanism is unclear. A recent study showed that just a 4-week intake of 10% alcohol by rats was toxic to their genome due to induction of micronuclei. Acetaldehyde is the first product of ethanol metabolism and produce replication lesions in DNA. So friends, don't drink alcohol. It is toxic, even to your genes, setting you up for cancer. The fetal brain is highly moldable and is not only receptive but requires cues from its environment to develop properly. The available evidence suggests that exposure to excess stress in intrauterine life has the potential to adversely affect short-term and long-term neurodevelopmental outcomes. This may increase susceptibility to mental health disorders in childhood and adult life. Hormonal and inflammatory mediators are plausible pathways for programming brain development in the unborn child. So moms-to-be, consider how much stress you're under and limit it as much as possible during your pregnancy. I'm Dr. Narada McKibben and that's today's medical news report. Now you can go to our website, that's hopetv.org/gohealthy, and there you'll find all of the shows, all the recipes that we do on the show. Again, that's hopetv.org/gohealthy. Now, don't forget to call us live. Right now, our phone lines are open. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can text us at 301-960-5144. Thank you for posting your comments and your questions on our Facebook page. And here are some questions that we have not had a chance to answer on previous shows. Dave called. He said, how long am I contagious when I have the flu or a cold? Well, Dave, the bad news is you're actually contagious before you even know that you're getting the flu. So you can be contagious for a couple of days before you come down with the symptoms, and then 3 to 4 days typically, but maybe as far as 7 days out, you could still be shedding some virus. So that's why the flus and colds and actually viruses in general are so contagious, because we're spreading them and we don't even know it. Mary asked, I am 40 years old, how often should I be screened for cervical cancer? Well, Mary, we recommend that women, because cervical cancer is a disease of young women, we recommend screening from the age of 20 through to about 65, 70, and that screening happens every 3 years if everything is normal. However, if there is a problem smear, then you will receive a recommendation to have a repeat smear in 6 months until that problem is resolved, and then it will be each year for a little while before you revert back to 3 yearly recall, depending on how severe that abnormality was. Otherwise, you might stay on yearly recall. Jasmine texted, is tap water healthy? Well, I would much rather you drink tap water than colas. And yes, I would say tap water, generally speaking, is healthy. If you're in a city where, and I know I've got viewers all around the world, but if you are in a city where your tap water is sanitized and it's fit for drinking, then I would say yes. If there are a lot of chemicals going in to sanitize that water, you might want to think about putting a filter on, or just filtering your water even into just a standing jug that has a filter in it. Often you can find a charcoal filter, but that's a really great way to get nice, cheap, clean drinking water. And remember, and try to drink about 1.5 to 2 litres in the summer. Thank you for sending your questions. Keep sending them. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now let's watch this short video.
Epigenetics is a way that cells remember things. They can remember what genes they should use and they shouldn't use.
The epigenetic alterations that occur in cancer can turn off genes that are normally genes that control cancer growth and that prevent cancer growth.
What makes our project so exciting is that we have drugs that can reverse these changes, can unlock the doors, can turn genes back on again, make things right.
The biggest mandate was to do this for the major human cancers of lung, breast, and colon, and get trials started with doses where we thought we could get patients through these trials and start to find out what they could really do for these cancers. We have met those milestones. We have finished the first lung cancer trial, and the breast and colon cancer trials are up and going. I think it's worth commenting on the lung cancer trial, where patients have received ongoing chemotherapy for metastatic disease. If you did nothing to most of the patients that we treated, you might have a 4-month survival. What's fascinated us is we have a couple of complete responses, but we have about 20 to 25% that entered that have survived from 1 to over 4 years. We got it started, and that was our first big mandate. The second was to take old drugs, but look at them in a new way. Lower doses of those drugs would allow us to, quote, reprogram the cancer cell and do it in the major tumors where these drugs in the past have been so toxic they couldn't be used.
So what we've been doing is working with a drug company, and they have developed a drug with us. So because we had the grant and because there was this company, we've been able to really speed it up. And so we've already had 14 patients treated with a brand new drug. And that's a major, major milestone to get it started. And the exciting thing is it looks pretty good.
Nothing tops in this seeing a patient respond. I mean, that is the thrill. Laboratory data is a thrill. We love science. But seeing a patient respond is what it's all about. We bring science to that, but this is the endpoint.
Stand Up to Cancer is going to make a real difference because it forces you to measure progress by what you've done for other people.
This is fascinating stuff. Now, Dr. Kelly, you have a couple of pictures of monkeys, and this is a fascinating study. Tell us about this work with the monkeys.
Yes, I think we have the picture of these two monkeys. Canto is on the left, and Owen is on the right. Canto is about 27 years of age, wow. And Owen is about 29, which is unusual because the average lifespan of these rhesus monkeys in captivity is about 25 years of age. But if you look at the two, you can see that the one on the left looks a little healthier and nicer looking than on the right. And what this is, this
they
is...
They actually, to me, look like they're a whole generation apart.
They do, don't they?
At least.
You could easily say, you could easily convince someone that Kento was Owen's son, but actually, they're only a couple of years different.
Or even grandson.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's interesting, this is a study, it's a 20-year study involving rhesus monkeys. This was started in 1989 by the National Primate Research Center at the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And what's interesting is now that they have found that they're on calorie restriction. Half of these monkeys are on a calorie restriction, which is about 30% less calories, but it's still a nutritionally adequate diet. So as far as the nutrients, they're getting, they're basically cutting calories by about 30%. And as we heard earlier, this is important, that the composition of the diet is important as well as the caloric restriction. But what I wanted to point out is that they say it reduces the risk of the most common age-related conditions, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and brain atrophy by about a third. In fact, here's one that's really remarkable, Dr. Narity. They say that while five of the monkeys on the normal diet with the normal calories became diabetic and 11 are pre-diabetic, there is absolutely none in the calorie-restricted. In the calorie-restricted group, there is no diabetes, no pre-diabetes so far in these animals.
And how many monkeys in each group?
There's 76 total, so it's about around 30.
So it's about half of them have diabetes or pre-diabetes in the unrestricted diet group?
Yes.
At 5 plus 11? Wow. Now, they're still going to be waiting, I guess, to see how long they live.
Absolutely. This study has got another 15 years or more probably to go to see, because one of the questions is, it's clear that the caloric restriction is delaying the effects of aging. But what we don't yet know is it actually helping these monkeys to live longer. In other words, of course, either case, I would be happy. I would, if my patients would not get these diseases until the last year of life, that would be wonderful. But it would also be nice if they live another 10 years of a healthy lifestyle.
That's true. Dr. Meyer, can you explain why this is happening to the monkeys? Is there a genetic explanation to this?
Well, there is an epigenetic explanation. The physiological mechanisms are still poorly understood. We know that there is decrease of oxidative damage. We know that the nutrient signaling and insulin signaling is working better, so to say. There is enhanced stress responsiveness. But what's interesting, there is changes in gene expression. So we talked in the epigenetic program about methylation and histones. So in the caloric restrictive diet, you have more methylation going on, so you can control the pro-cancer genes better, if you want to look at it that way. And you can activate a gene that is called sirtuin-1, and that gene plays a key role in lifespan. So if sirtuin-1 cannot be activated in a caloric-restricted mice, for example, because he has some faulty sirtuin-1 gene, then you can't see the effects of the caloric restriction. So sirtuin-1 is a key gene in this whole process. Mm-hmm. And there's, interestingly, maybe not everyone wants to go on caloric restriction. There are other substances which are called caloric restriction mimetic substances. And one of them is resveratrol, which is found in red grapes, and that also has been shown to activate sirtuin-1. So if you eat less calories, maybe you can drink more grape juice.
Oh, that sounds great. I like that, Dr. Meyer. Dr. Kelly, resveratrol is something that is very easily available.
Yes.
But do you have any suggestions about calorie restriction? Well, it sounds pretty severe to drop your calories by 30%, go down to 70%. But have you found a way of doing that comfortably?
Well, it's interesting. Thinking of it from a practical clinical for a moment. In lifestyle medicine, we often have people who are seeking to reduce their weight, decrease BMI, and how they want to know, how can we do this the simplest? And what I often find is simply going from the typical dietary pattern in the U.S. and increasingly the world, which is to have a large supper, is to put have a large breakfast and have little or no supper. And so you can, by eliminating one meal, especially if it was one of the larger meals of the day, you could easily cut your calories quite a bit. And so what we find is that eating a light supper or no supper is a very simple, practical way to cut calories. And of course, another nice thing is you're more likely to go to bed on a good time if you haven't had supper.
Well, friends, remember to call now, share with us your question about epigenetics. I've got some great guests. Go grab your phone. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or text us, 301-960-5144. Go healthy for good. We'll be back after a short break, so stay right there.
I love learning about my ancestors. It makes me feel like I have a place in history. And I always tell my family, the more you learn about your past, the more you understand the present. But the past doesn't have all the answers, especially about the future. There's so much uncertainty and so much fear in the world today. Which is why I'm so happy that I found something that brings together my past, my present, and my future. I know that no matter what happens, there is a plan. And this gives me hope.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions, especially ones related to epigenetics and the things that we've been talking about tonight. Number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Pick up the phone and call us now. Our lines are open. Now, I have a text question here, and this is for Dr. Meyer. Dr. Meyer, our texter says, I am always stressed. Will it affect the length of my telomeres and the aging of my cells? So does stress hasten telomere shortening?
Well, yeah, probably yes. It depends if it's a short stress, like a couple of days, weeks, or if it's a chronic stress. So short stress is okay, and it may even be positive for you. But it has been shown in a 2004 paper, seminal paper, one of the authors was Elizabeth Blackburn, who won the 2009 Nobel Prize for her work on telomeres. And they studied mothers of chronically ill children and mothers of children without any problem. And they saw that the higher the perceived stress the mother had by testing the mother and so on, the shorter the telomeres in her white blood cells was. So chronic stress, at least in the white blood cells of your body, will probably lead to telomere shortening. And that has also been shown in women taking care of their Alzheimer's, of their husbands who had Alzheimer's.
So that nurturing and that caregiving, we need to deal with the stress that goes along with that in a way that can still help us cope with that stress, I guess, but limit the physical effect on our body and on our genetic makeup. Wow. Here's a question for you, Dr. John. Are these epigenetic changes passed on to future generations like the genetic code?
Yes, that's a great question. And the answer is yes. In fact, you know, we don't inherit DNA, we inherit chromosomes. And chromosomes are only 50% DNA. The other part of this is the epigenetic marks, the epigenome. And so when we inherit our chromosomes from our parents. They come with not only the genes, but with the epigenome as well, the switches already set, and the influences are largely mediated through that epigenome. So absolutely, it's passed on. And in one study where they were doing this in the agouti mouse that we talked about in our previous segment, the effects were reported to be evident for 3 to 4 generations after the mother was fed the special methylating diet and the genes were turned off.
So it wasn't just that they got the switches. They got the switches thrown in the same configuration.
That's right.
As what the mother's lifestyle or diet in that case.
Yes.
Was.
And you know, and in that case, the effect was so strong that it looked like the phenotype of the offspring had no evidence of the genes for disease that had been engineered into the mother. So there's, at least in mice, there's strong evidence that you can have a tremendous impact on offspring for multiple generations.
Wow. Dr. Meyer, if I want to, this is a text question, if I want to, will it be possible to activate telomerase, and live forever?
I mean, that would be a good idea, but the downside of activating telomerase is that any cell in your body that already has a mutation and there is this possibility to keep on dividing will probably manifest itself as a tumor. So in the long run, you don't want to activate telomerase in every cell because you would end up with a lot of cancer cases.
So it's a corrupt file and we're just going to magnify the corruptions. That makes sense. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Meyer and Dr. Kelly, for being with us. It was great to learn from you. Now, remember, as you change your lifestyle, as you limit your stress, you can change your destiny. Restricting calories is not so hard. We had a great way from Dr. Kelly here of how to restrict your calories in a way that's very palatable. Determined to make each day a step towards excellence. Thank you for joining us on Go Healthy for Good.